There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1099. Head over to ID10T.com, sign up for the email list. We have a bunch of new Halloween stuff in, some vintage Halloween stuff as well. So check that out in the shop. And you can follow us on Instagram, which is just at ID10T, the very name of this podcast. How convenient. Let's talk about you, the ID10T community, and the Corkboard events at ID10T.com. Like Chris, who writes, I wanted to write in about a project I started before the pandemic. I got an iPad Pro right before all this craziness started so I could use it to practice drawing. I've always enjoyed doodling and sketching, but never put in the time to be really any good. So I decided to teach myself a new skill by practicing about an hour a day, similar to what Chris, me, is doing for piano and guitar. Nice! To show my art and catalog my progress, I started an Instagram page. My goal is to improve and grow my skill level over time. My art is mostly nerdy things like superheroes and sci-fi characters. You can see it on Instagram at CMAZZART. At CMAZZART. All right. Great job, Chris. What a fantastic idea to practice something a little bit every day. And I'm telling you, over time, those practice hours that you're putting in, you're depositing in your personal growth account, for lack of a better term, will reap dividends. And you'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe, look, just because I put in a little bit of consistent effort. So great job, great job, great job. For anyone else, you can send in your thing to events at id10t.com. This episode is Elizabeth Marvel, who is an amazing actor. She's been on so many phenomenal shows and so many phenomenal movies. She's been in Lincoln, True Grit, Burn After Reading. She's been on a bunch of different series like House of Cards, Fargo, Person of Interest. She's guested on every Law and Order show, literally. We talk about it. She's literally guested on every iteration of Law and Order. And she's such a, not only is she a phenomenal actress, but as we talk about in the podcast, I stumbled across a video of her that I watched that was all about, it was about, she's talking about Shakespeare. And it became this very like philosophical, existential, like applicable to life kind of advice as she was sort of navigating like how to approach Shakespeare for the stage. And so we just had so much great stuff to talk about. She has so much phenomenal advice. She's such a cool lady. So whether or not you're an actor, whether or not you're a stage performer who's contemplating doing Shakespeare, there are definitely things that you'll be able to take away from this podcast, things that you'll be able to apply in whatever your own discipline is. So Elizabeth is on the new Marvel Hulu series Hellstrom, which is based on a series of comics from Marvel. So Lydia and I are 4 episodes into that right now and really loving it. So check it out. Hellstrom is on Hulu. And Elizabeth Marvel, thank you so much for being awesome. It was so wonderful to talk to you. Here is the ID10T podcast number 1099 with Elizabeth Marvel, who is coincidentally starring in a Marvel series, which I think she should rightly own because her last name is Marvel. So, I'm no legal expert, but I'm pretty sure that's how that works. All right, roll the thing!
Initiating ID10T protocol.
We were trying to get a microphone connected, but it just didn't want to cooperate.
You know, technology is, you know, I would say technology is good, not always great, and generally creates more problems than it tries to solve.
Yes. Yes. I would agree with that. I would wholeheartedly agree.
I will say the ability to do podcasts when people can't get near each other
is a good thing.
It has been kind of amazing. It changed my perspective on, I was always a, you have to be in front of people. How can you have a conversation if you're not sitting in front of people and connecting with them? And
yeah,
the universe was like, well, that's not possible.
So deal with it.
Yeah. So Zoom has been a really great way around that.
I have to say, you know, being a working mom over the years, and having to be far from home at times,
yeah,
I've been profoundly grateful for things like FaceTime and, you know, to be able to see my family.
Oh, I'll bet.
So I sort of made peace with tech in a small way, because I'm a hippie Luddite, so I don't know from technology at all. But the little that I engage with, I'm grateful for.
Yeah, it definitely... My wife is the one between the two of us that will say, well, we're going to put away our, let's go away for a weekend and not bring any phones. And I'm like,
yeah,
I don't understand. What do you mean? Don't bring any phones. Like, just bring one and keep it off. She's like, no, it's not any. And I'm like, but safety, what are we going to, how are we supposed to, you know, and, you know, so I think there is a balance between not being on your phones all the time and throwing them in a lake. I feel like there is some type of a moderation, like everything else.
I don't know. I think that's open for debate. Honestly, I don't know if there is true moderation with these devices. I think it's a massive challenge just in the way that they're designed.
Well, they are. I mean, there's no question that devices and social media were designed to hit our most primal addiction centers.
Yep. So I think I vote for throwing them in a lake, honestly.
Status update, lake. That's my status update. In a lake. That's my status update. It's really nice to talk to you, because you've done so much great television and film and theater. And I started watching a video of yours from the New York Theater Workshop. And it like my antenna went straight up, because you immediately delved into this area that I would love to start chipping away at, which is, you were talking about it. I was like, oh, okay. I would really love to see, you know, how Elizabeth, you know, views acting. And it just took this hard right philosophical turn into the formation of thoughts and ideas and existentialism. And I was like, holy shit, we're going to have so much to talk about. This is great. So I was...
That's awesome.
Yes, because it, and I know there's a ton to talk about. I want to talk about how your son dressed up like Stan Lee. I want to talk about...
Yes.
I want to talk about what I'm sure you're tired of mentioning, which is having the last name Marvel and being in a Marvel series. Like, it's so many, there's so many things, but this broad philosophical idea of, you know, using theater and using your being as an actor on a stage to inform lessons about life and how we move through the universe is, I am so excited to talk about this. So what was the, I mean, first of all, let's talk a little bit about your background.
Sure.
And I assume, did you go to Juilliard? You did go to Juilliard.
I did.
So you studied drama at Juilliard.
I did. I went there pretty much out of high school with a brief detour following the Grateful Dead. And that's the whole journey right there.
You followed the Grateful Dead. You did? How many concerts?
You know, that I can remember.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, triple digits over the the course of a life.
Yeah.
Nah, and listen, that's too many, but a lot.
There are bands that I love that I have seen a few times, and I consider myself a rabid fan. But I guess if you are going on the road and following a band and, you know, eating strange meat out of someone's trunk, you probably, which I assume happened, you probably, like, that's a lifestyle, right? That's a community. Is that
absolutely
what that is?
100%. Yep. That's exactly what it is. And I was a very young person who was super lost, and I was a visual arts student. That was my focus. And I was at a boarding school. My mother had moved to Sicily, and I was sort of just at loose ends, and I got into a little bit of trouble in high school, so which we don't need to go into.
No,
I didn't complete my art portfolio. So anyway, I was sort of up in the air trying to figure out what to do with myself, and yeah, I ended up at Juilliard as an actor, like you do after a lot of dead shows.
Okay, now this might be me like reaching too far. So if this is a dumb, pretentious question, by all means, just smack it down.
Okay,
but are you to see that many shows presented to the audience? Did you learn something as an artist? Like, these are songs these guys have played a ton, and I assume they play them slightly differently each time. They kind of mix up their set list. So the idea of the relationship of your art to yourself and to your audience, what are you learning about that type? Since you were a visual artist to understanding presentation, what is it you picked up from the Grateful Dead?
Do you know, there actually is, and it's so interesting because nobody has ever asked me that question. And I think it is such an excellent question.
Oh, thanks.
Because it wasn't just being a burnout and, you know, running around and dancing.
Yeah.
I actually did learn a lot about performative bravery from them, because those guys, for better or worse, were never going to repeat and were always like fully willing to make a mess on stage, but so boldly and so bravely and so creatively. You know, it wasn't just because they were so stoned that they couldn't get it together, although there were always those shows, but a lot of it was just this pursuit and exploration and willingness to make a mess. And that is definitely something that I carry as a creative person. I am very willing to make a mess.
Oh, that's genius, because you have to be in order to free yourself up to be creative. Because if you're, I always kind of shit on perfectionism as an unattainable roadblock.
Oh, it's a killer. It's a killer in all forms. It is a killer, perfectionism.
Yeah.
It'll take you down. And it is the least useful quality in any pursuit, really, but certainly in the creative world. Perfectionism has no place.
What's funny about it is that it's not even definable, really. Like, it's just this ideal. It's just this ideal that we craft in our heads that is based on mostly our own baggage, but it doesn't even really, like, I don't even know, like, if you were to ask a Grateful Dead, what was your show perfect? I don't even know if they could answer that. I don't even know how you would answer that from that point of view.
Absolutely. And you know, to me, like, the pursuit of perfectionism is just the shitty committee in my head. You know, it's just, that's where it lives.
Start using shitty committee as the nagging, bad, negative voices that tell you you can't do stuff or you're
dumb. That's right. Or it's not good enough. It's not perfect. That wasn't perfect.
Oh, that one hit me sideways. I wasn't prepared for it. Oh my God. That's so genius. But you know, the Grateful Dead, what's great about what they built. And listen, I like a couple Grateful Dead songs. I can't say, you know, like, Radiohead's my favorite band. I don't know how many Radiohead shows I would go to. I'm just not a go out person.
Yep.
But
I hear you.
But what they were able to build was a, because every night it seems like, because they had this community, this lifestyle, this fan base that was like their family, they basically got up every night and performed in their family's living room. So yeah. they had the freedom to not worry about it, because they knew that that was the agreement and the relationship that they had with their community, which is genius. That's just a genius setup.
Yeah, and for a kid like I was, who was lost and alone, it was such a benevolent, wonderful place to land, because a whole community carried me. You know, I always had a place to sleep. I always had food to eat. I was taken care of. And that was really fortunate at that time for me.
Holy shit. What an incredible lesson. I mean, listen, it's easy for people to look down on their nose and go, oh, these burnouts are just going on the road. But I think, what an incredible lesson that you learned at a young age, that if you just sort of have some faith in whatever it is, that you'll get what you need and you'll be taken yeah. care of, and that you'll have this safety net. That's an incredible, the implications of that are very profound for adult life, I would imagine.
I agree. And yes, and that we do take care of each other.
But then to go from what I imagine was, you know, a relatively unstructured lifestyle to the most structured lifestyle.
It was a steep learning curve.
Being dropped in an ice bath.
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Needless to say, I spent all 4 years having teachers talking to me, critiquing me, saying, do you really want to be here? Are you sure? Are you really focused?
Was that because you specifically, or because they ask everyone that to make sure?
Well, they do ask everyone that. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But it was interesting because my class at school, there were 14 of us, which is crazy. I mean, because thousands of people auditioned for that school. Right. And initially there were 18, and then 4 people were cut, which is a horrible thing. But although ultimately I think for all of them who left, it was a good thing. But anyway, my class was a remarkably talented group of people, fantastic people. But it was definitely, for me, it was one of these things is not like the others, because mm-hmm. I was in a very different place when I rolled in there. And I wasn't a theater kid. And I wasn't from a theater background, and I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything. I had never done a play. I knew like zero about theater, except having seen a lot of it. And so I was really a blank page. And I started going downtown a lot in New York and getting very influenced by like the Worcester Group and what was happening at La Mama and what was happening at New York Theater Workshop, and got really turned on by a lot of international artists. And my class was in a very different place. they were much more sort of musical theater oriented, and like great singers, incredible singers. And I was not a singer. And so my head was just, I was just moving in a very different direction than a lot of my classmates. Although I liked them all enormously and found them incredibly talented and exciting, but I was just in a different place.
Yeah, that type of I shouldn't say overstructured. It's just very, very structured.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I often wonder about the sort of distinction between, you know, the craft and the art. And I think about it a lot. And, you know, recently I started kind of saying to myself, well, and I said this on a podcast recently, that, you know, the craft is all the work you do to sort of build the structure, and then the art is making the craft disappear. Yeah. And when you are, you know, and I, again, because I'm so fascinated by the number of shows that the Grateful Dead did, in addition to the parallel existence of a theater actor.
Yeah.
Or also a stand, or like doing stand up. But yeah. The idea of doing something hundreds of times.
Yeah.
Yet every time you get on stage, you have to find that molecule or nugget of magic that makes it seem fresh or real to you. Even if you don't feel 100%. It, being able to fake it.
100%. And you know, one of the things that I always do, because it's all one painting, right?
Right.
All we're doing is one ongoing piece of work. And so because of that, whenever I go to set or I go to perform on stage, I give myself a task. Every show, every scene, everything. I give myself a task. I say, okay, this is what I'm going to work on today for this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pursue this tonight in the play. I'm going to try to concentrate on this. And so I always have something to work on. It's never like, I'm just going to do the show and see what happens, see where the people are at, you know? And I find, like, I talk to friends who do that. And I think, wow, that is, I can't imagine. I would be a nervous wreck if I wasn't just in the work all the time.
Mm-hmm. And is it the idea that, you know, those nights where you don't, some nights you just don't feel it, you know? Is that where the years of experience comes in, where you go, okay, well, tonight I'm not feeling as passionate, so I'm just going to fall back on the technical craft and just kind of let the repetitiveness of it carry me through?
Yes. But I mean, you know this, like I can't tell you how many times I have to relearn the lesson of, like, I walk off the stage or I finish a take and feel like, oh my God, that was humiliating. That was so awful. And then there's the person waiting backstage saying, that changed my life. Or watch playback and go, oh no, that was the take. And the moment, the shows that you think, oh my God, I arrived, I did it. I pleased the committee, you know?
Yeah.
It was terrible. You get all the notes from the director that night and they're up your ass because, like, you took too much time or whatever, you know, it's never what we perceive. And therefore it's not really our business. We just, our business, our job is to do our work and deliver it in a timely fashion to the best of our ability. And while doing our work in a timely fashion to the best of our ability, we can continue to tinker and explore things that are interesting. That's what I think.
But that also, like, that screws with your head in the sense that, listen, I think when everyone, whether it's a creative pursuit or whatever, when people are kind of doing stuff, they kind of have this internal barometer, you know, where it's like, there's a little green zone of what I think I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm just going to try to keep the slider in that green zone and not go into the fringes, into the red where I'm really fucking up. But how do you know, like you said, sometimes your internal barometer is just so far off because you don't have the right perspective. You know, it's like you can do a show sometimes and then it's like the crowd is not as vociferous as they could be. And like you said, you go, oh, that show didn't go very well. And then someone comes backstage and they go, oh my God, that was so, and you go, oh my God, yeah. I think just as a group, they just maybe weren't as loud.
They were just quiet. Yeah.
So how do I know if I'm doing the right thing if I am prone to being such a poor judge and having an internal barometer that is not on the correct setting? Like, what do I fall back on to know how I'm doing?
And that's where experience and repetition come into play. Right. You know, that's where just by doing the thing
a lot,
you just know, you said your words in order.
Right.
You did the thing that you set out to do. You did it from beginning to end. And, you know, as far as, I mean, how does one judge quality? I don't think as a creative person, it's ours to judge.
Right.
And therefore I also don't feel like others' opinions are any of our business either. We just need
to keep
making.
Because that's all on social media.
See, I don't do social. I don't engage. I've never done it, and I live outside of it, mainly because I just find as a creative person, it's just not my business to know.
But you have a child who's probably like early teenage years.
He's 14.
So he must be.
He does
not. Wow, nope. That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's his choice. It's not like us saying you're. Not, you know, he. It's his world, and he's just not interested yet.
I have hope for the Gen Zers because I think the Gen Zers will look at the sort of that the kind of rampant narcissism of every generation before, who, you know, and go, yeah, I don't know if I want, I mean, I know people whose kids are about your son's age, and they'll say things like, hey, you're on your phone. What are you trying to get the approval of strangers? Like, the kids are already they're already aware.
Absolutely.
And they're kind of rebelling against it as gross.
Absolutely. I mean, which is so awesome. No, these 14-year-old people that I know are astonishing to me.
Oh, that's
they're
good
amazing.
News.
And it is very good news. It's very good news, because these people that are coming are awesome. And if we don't destroy everything before they take over, the world will be better for them. I firmly believe.
I read something about you, which is a fun factoid that is relative to my interests, which is that you've been on every Law and Order show.
Yes, I'm a proud New York actor.
Who says no when you're flipping channels and there's Law and Order? You're like, shit. Well,
yeah.
I gotta see what Lenny and McCoy are up to.
Yeah.
One of the things that I love about, you're right. So what you said about, oh, New York theater actor, of course, has been on Law and Order because there's so many Law and Order shows. Listen, if you're a rotating regular cast member on Law and Order, great. There's great actors on there. That's really fun. But the genius of that show are these great day actors who come in just to be interviewed. It's like you have one, maybe two scenes to tell the audience who your character is, have a character, fit yourself into this very concrete pre-existing structure. Like it's fucking great. It's
totally.
Work. You have to, I feel like y'all have to do a lot more heavy lifting than the people that just sort of like, you know, already know who their character is. They've had time to evolve them. They kind of just show up, you know?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's definitely like every New York actor has to cut their teeth in a Law and Order show. And it's just part of the cred. Like, you have to do a few of them. I can remember like one day going to work and half the cast of Hamilton was like the show. You know, I mean, everybody turns up on set.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And it's the gig that whoever's on Broadway does a Law and Order to sort of, you know, make some side cash.
Yeah.
Before they have to go make curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're like, you know, these people are in like these Tony winning plays. And then during the day they show up and go, yeah, I heard of that guy. I don't know.
Exactly.
He came in here a couple of times. What are you asking me for? You know, my boss is riding my ass. All right. Well, yeah.
Totally. You know. Yeah. Totally. It's so good. It's so good.
So I would love to talk a little bit. Well, first of all, please tell me about your son's obsession with Stan Lee and dressing like Stan.
Oh,
or was it for a Comic-Con? Was it for a
Comic-Con? You bet. It was for a Comic-Con. Actually, he did it several years in a row, but there was a year, I want to say like 4 years ago, but I'm not exact on the date. And Stan was at the Comic-Con. So when would that have been? He was there. And my son was like a total, like the glasses, he sprayed his hair gray. He had the little gray mustache. He had the jacket. He had the, you know, the chinos. It was like full Stan. And everyone was stopping him to get their picture with mini Stan. You know, he was definitely making a bit of a impression on the Comic-Con that year. And we were approaching the stand, you know, where Stan was to sign, but the line was so freaking long. And I was, you know, debating whether I should try to cut it and just take my kid. But Stan saw him because we weren't that far away and, you know, gave him the Excelsior.
Oh,
and it just, great. Yeah, it was the greatest. It was the greatest.
That's fantastic. I mean, is your son an avid comic reader, or is it the Marvel Cinematic
Absolutely.
Universe?
Absolutely. It's Marvel. Both, but he's a huge big, big comic fan and has been since he was very young.
So so you probably got a big thumbs up on Hellstrom then, I imagine.
My world is different now that I work for Marvel. It's amazing.
I suspect your son wasn't dressing up like Jack McCoy. So
that's right. No, it's awesome. He's super excited. It's a bit of a bummer that finally my show is dropping at a Comic-Con and it's all virtual.
Of course. It's
a bit of a bummer that I can't be bringing him this year and doing panels and stuff. But
Next year.
Exactly.
Fingers
crossed.
We'll
be back. We'll be back and it'll be better. And we'll all be even more excited.
Yeah, the virtual panels are a great sort of a quick fix.
It's a good solution. Yeah.
It's the best that we can do. It's the safest, most responsible thing.
Yeah.
But there is nothing like being on stage or being a part of just thousands of people whose Venn diagrams all kind of bubble over each other. I mean, talk about community, you know?
Totally. It's so wonderful. And the creativity that I see there, because I can remember, I think the first one I took him to, he was like 7. We've been going for years. And I was so put out by having to like go to the Javits Center and, you know, help my son with his costume. And then I went there and I was like, oh, I get it. I get it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's thrilling. I loved it.
Not that, yes, I guess aesthetically different, but spiritually probably not that different from the Grateful Dead, you know, like community.
There is a through line there. There is a through line there. Absolutely.
Brought together to sort of help each other. Javits Center is, you know, San Diego is, even though it's like more generally more crowded, San Diego Comic-Con, like the convention center is one giant space, and Javits Center is the largest space that New York has to hold that many people at once. It's not like a sports stadiums, but it's not, there's not like one, it's really sort of designed like a habit trail. There's like, it's sort of
totally
like a hamster. So it's like
right.
You go up one narrow stairway and then there's one big room, but then you got to go back, squeeze through a bunch of other delightful
totally.
Rooms, you know, like to get down to the panel rooms. And then there's another conference center over there, but that's you got to go through the little glass tube, you know. But
that is so true.
In its absence, I missed the shit out of it, you know? It's like, it's just,
I know.
Being a part of that human experience was so great. I mean, is it, did your son's interest influence your pursuit of this project?
No, I mean, no, I mean, it's a great gig, no matter what, you know, I wanted the gig, but it definitely, the benefits that I've reaped from the gig are a whole new level.
Right.
Personal
right.
benefits.
Right.
Yes.
Right. I mean, it is once again, it's, it's becoming a part of a community. And even though like, and a community that you'll always be a part of, you know, like you'll for years, because you've now been touched by it in a way, because now you've become a part of it. It's an indelible part of your life now. You can go to Comic-Cons forever if you wanted to
and participate. No, and it's so, I mean, it's such a funny thing too, when you get the initiation call, you know, you get the big phone call. They like 5 different people check in to make sure you're available to pick up the phone. And then I heard this like crazy booming voice saying, "Welcome to Marvel. Okay. Fantastic.
And is it, I imagine you shot this a while ago. So this isn't, it's all done.
It's all done. It drops October, mid October.
I have the date right here.
It drops.
Yeah,
it's dropping 16th. Soon.
It's on Hulu October 16th.
So I was in Vancouver. We shot it in Vancouver, and I was there for a very long time. And we finished second week of March.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So it wasn't that. I mean, yeah, I guess time is a very strange phenomenon right now. Trying to measure the passage of time is very hard.
I find that it somehow simultaneously feels long and fast somehow.
Yeah.
That it's
yeah.
like, oh my God, how are we like 7 months into this already? And yet the days feel long, you know, it's like what? Every day is Wednesday. I don't know. You can't really, it's hard to make plans.
Since it's a motif now, there's a Grateful Dead lyric that says, "Such a long, long time to be gone and a short time to be there."
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is changing how we perceive time because we're just so aware of the days now. I think we've really realized, or I think a lot of people have realized, like, oh yeah, I was able to distract myself all day long, and so everything felt really fast. And then now it's like there's not as many distractions, and I don't think that's a bad thing, but too much not distractions is not great. I mean, who wants to be in their own head all the time? But,
but it's interesting. We've been living on a farm in Vermont since the great pause has happened. Yeah. And we have definitely become newly attuned to the lunar cycle and sort of what birds do seasonally and what trees are doing seasonally. So it's been a re-engagement for my little family. No, we're not farming per se, but we are definitely engaging with the land in a new way.
I'm telling you, I've really started to get it. I've started to really understand it, where it's like, you know, oh, well, if you plant this here under certain conditions and you take steps to do this and foster this or whatever, then you yield. It's like this. I know it's not a simple thing to do, but I mean, at least the philosophical simplicity of it, the linear nature of plant seeds, grow fruit, you know, milk cows, get milk, have chickens, get eggs. I know there's a lot more to it than that, but the simplicity of that, of like, oh my God, that sounds fucking great. You know, like to work in these creative fields where it's not linear, and a lot of it has nothing to do with anything that really involves us, and we have no control over any of it, and it's unpredictable, and
totally
knows what the business is anymore. You know, just the idea of like sun comes up, sun goes down, chickens lay eggs, I get eggs, I eat eggs, put the poop in the grass, you know, like more grows, you know, it's like all of it, like that carbon cycle really sounds super attractive right now.
I completely understand. Yes. Yes. That's why I guess we should say we're living farm adjacent. We're living on a farm. We're just not tending. Other people are farming around us.
You're farming adjacent. But one day I feel like you might look out and go,
let's, you know what?
Tomatoes. And then
totally,
you know, we have a vegetable garden, and I did a couple of runs at some things and realized how much work it is and how much you really have to pay attention to the balance. It's like, okay, we planted corn and some corn grew, but then these weird bugs showed up and they had all of it. So then we'd have to figure out, it would be a constant like recalibration and balancing. And it really is a metaphor for life, because I think we always want the result in life. We just want perfect corn.
Sure.
And we want the perfect result. And we don't always really understand, appreciate, or even want to take part in the process of achieving that result. But the magic in the growth is in the growing and the tending of the corn.
That's
and
right.
So in as much as we can wrench that into kind of a creative experience, how are you in this absence of, you know, your the art that you do, how are you tending to the corn creatively, I guess?
Well, you know, like with all things, this pause has given me time, which is the great luxury in my life. You know, the great luxury item to me is time. Mm-hmm. And I would give any amount of money to have more of it. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I've had it, and it's been radical for me, because I cannot tell you, if ever, a period of time where my family has been able to sit down and have dinner every night. But seriously, one of us is always, because my husband's an amazing actor, and one of us is always away doing a job somewhere, you know, or having to make curtain, because he does stage, film, and television too. So we're always cycling with these jobs, and one of us is always coming and going, and our son has a lot of things going on in his life. So it's just like a three-ring circus all the time, because we have to work. We can't not work. And so to be able to make meals, sit down, take time with our meals, talk with each other has been radical. And that, of course, feeds the giant painting that I'm working on over the course of my life. But I've also been able to engage with other artists that I normally don't have time to ruminate with, to just talk to. You know, it's usually whoever's in front of me on set is who's getting me. And then whatever's left over is, goes to my family. And that's it. But I've been able to talk to all kinds of artists that I have great admiration for. Because that's another thing, you know, that I've found in life is that there's really no limit to who you can have access to or what kind of ideas or creativity you can pursue. It's really up to you whether you set limits on that. I find, like, creatively, if I have a good idea, anybody is interested in a good idea. Everybody's interested in a good idea. And if there's something I want to talk about with someone who's interesting, you know, I can find a way to have a conversation with that person. I'm sure you do this for a living. You can do this. You do this all the time. So anyway, I've engaged with people. I've also engaged with my community. I've engaged with my country more. I've become much more useful and of service to myself and others, not just as in my professional life, but in just as a human being on the planet. I've become more useful. I've been more useful to members of my family. So yeah, all of those things just make me expand, make me bigger, which then deepens my creative life.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
You know, I wonder how many people will, I mean, listen, there are some people who probably went into quarantine and knew, like, well, I hated what I was doing before, so I want to try to pursue something else if that's possible, if I have the luxury of being able to do that. And I wonder if some people will be surprised when they go back, you know, whatever that is, to that grind that you were talking about, that kind of machine of, like, I'm dealing with whatever's in front of me. And I'm just sort of like, I'm just moment to moment is the energy that I have. And I'm just putting it into this thing. And then I wonder how many people, like, once that machine fires back up again, I'll go, I don't think so. I don't like this anymore.
Yeah, that absolutely. I think that's absolutely true. And it's funny because I'm having a weird renaissance in my relationship with my profession. I feel newly, like, I was definitely at a place of just being done. Being done with the theater. I felt really done with the theater. And I felt like, you know, doing film and television, I was enjoying, but it was definitely, you know, getting to be a blur, getting to be like, okay, I'm on a plane going here for this thing. And who is the boss here? You know, and where are my suitcases kind of thing. And I definitely, after having some time to breathe and just live and be a mom and be a wife, and I am very excited to reengage professionally.
Oh, that's great! That's great to hear. Really great to hear, because it is, you know, I think it's easy to forget that art is kind of a re-expression of experiences, and if you're always re-expressing, you know, you have a lake of creativity that's not infinite.
That's right.
It needs to rain every so, you have to pause for it to rain so it can refill. But it's easy because our lifestyles are so nomadic and sort of hunter-gathery. And it's like, well, if we're getting a lot of work, we got to, of course you have to take it, because we don't know when it's, we don't know when it, when we're going to get hit with a famine again. And, and you forget like, oh, I think I need to pause to refill, to be able to do, you know, to be able to express things in new ways. So it's really nice to hear you say that.
Yeah. Yeah. And hear new opinions and expose yourself to different people and different activities. Absolutely. It's really important.
Can, you know, I think the other big challenge of creatives and artists in general, I mean, the big challenge for anyone, but is the, you know, I think the creative part can, is very closely Velcroed to the ego part. And, you know, in pursuit of creativity, it can be so tied to who you are. And then it is just like a piece of Velcro. And how do you kind of rip that ego part away so that you're making good creative decisions and not ego decisions, which are very, it's very easy to fall in that trap because of course we need more attention if we're going to do more of the thing that we want to do. It's part of the fucked up metric of our business, you know, and, but in a very literal interpretation of that or in a literal expression of that is, you know, studios going, how many followers does that person have on Instagram? You know, which is, you know, annoying, but how do we, you know, as someone who is giving that kind of masterclass that you talked about for the New York Theater Workshop, how do we not fall into that trap and separate ourselves from ego to make sure that we're making good creative decisions and exploring who we are creatively and not be trapped? A little ego is probably good. It's a little fire, but too much is like, and it's just so easy to fall into that trap.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a daily practice, right? It's a daily practice. And it's also what is the work and what is, what are some of the defining qualities in the work? And I often look at myself as sort of a plumber or a carpenter. You know, I have a skill set, I have tools, and I'm hired to do a job with that I do well. I can fix things, I can build things, and I'm good at it. And, but it, it's, I'm one of many, I'm a worker amongst workers. It's a group effort. It's not about me. It's about we, and it's a collective experience. And also, you know, just a daily, touching of impermanence, which is just the only truth there is in the universe is impermanence. So you never, when you arrive somewhere, it doesn't stay. You know, if you achieve something, it doesn't last. It may return again in another form, but it's not like, oh, you've got it. You are it. You are the thing. It's just today, this is what you're doing. And it's going to change tomorrow for better or for worse. And this physical being is going to change and transform over time. And you have to accept it. It's just a process of acceptance and self-acceptance and not clutching on to something tightly and identifying that that is me, that somehow this job I do is a definition of self, because then you're in trouble, man. Then you're in trouble. It, you just, you know, mind your own business and work hard. That's how I go about it. I just work hard.
It's great to hear you say that. And I love when I hear, cause, apologies for, I'm not purposely doing a name drop, but I was just talking to Alan Arkin.
I'll just drop that on the floor. He's amazing. Oh my gosh. We were just watching Catch 22 a few weeks ago. Great movie. Anyway, go ahead.
He's amazing. Yeah. But he said the exact same thing that you said, which is the idea of not being your career, not being your job. And it's such a brilliant, and I, so what my point is, I love hearing people say the same things who I feel are wiser than I am, because I feel like you need to listen to that, because that's important, because multiple people are saying this. And so it must have some weight to it. or they wouldn't have arrived at this point, you know, these people that you respect. And so that idea of separating yourself from your job and going, well, this is the thing that I do, but how do you, you know, sometimes like, where do you find the motivation? You have to find it in the love of what you're doing and not in the result of how you think you will be perceived or how.
Not in the result in how you're going to be perceived.
Not in the
Absolutely.
Result.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, yeah, it's, I love the job I get to do. I love the work I get to do. I'm endlessly curious about it. I'm really interested. I get to meet some very interesting people. But it's my job. It's just my job.
Yeah. Because no amount of anything is ever going to fill you forever. Like you said, well, you get there, you arrive at a place and, you know, the closest metaphor I can think of is when you're a kid and you see a toy commercial and you tell your parents, like, this is what I want for Christmas. I'll never want anything ever again if you just get me this thing.
Uh-huh.
And then Christmas Day, I sort of call it like, you know, December 27th syndrome, where it's just like December 25th and 26th, you are all over that thing. It's the greatest thing in the world. And December 27th, you set it down and you go do something else. And then maybe you pick it up again in a week and then you forget about it. And it's like you had that moment of acquisition and you thought it was going to be everything. And it was a moment.
Well, so that really comes down to what you want to be pursuing is curiosity and not obsession.
Yes. Ah, it's perfect. It's a perfect way to say that, because it's the obsession over the result as opposed to the curiosity and in the process, you know.
Yeah, because so often when I go to work, I where I really learn is when I'm asked to do something I don't know how to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I whatever I discover in that experience is fascinating. Then when I'm, you know, and I'm like, I got this, I know exactly how I'm going to do this. That's usually a crash and burn situation for me because I get very obsessed with the result.
Right. And you can't control the result.
Nope. Yep.
And the result is probably generally the most impermanent feeling.
That's right.
I mean, you can climb Everest, but you got to come down.
Yep.
You can't live on there.
Can't live up there. Nope. That's right. Nor would you want to.
Nor would you want to. It's like, yes, the conditions up there are murderous. It's not, no one. It's like people go up there and then I wonder if there are people that have like a weird depression afterwards because they're like, I spent most of my life trying to do this thing and I did, you know, how long does that feed you? I don't know. I would love to talk about a little bit what you were talking about in that video about the RI thoughts and ideas, you know, basically becoming defined and encased in the words that we say as they come out. And then that is the sort of capturing of these thoughts. Can you talk a little bit about this kind of philosophical masterclass that you gave?
Well, this was a class that I gave on Shakespeare. So it was really around working on verse, which is, you know, it's a little like music theory, because the great thing with Shakespeare is that he gives you everything you need within the line. He gives you so many clues because of how he builds the rhythm in a line. Mm-hmm. Because of the vowels and consonants he uses in words. There are just so many emotional informants in a verse line. And when you really understand, I mean, this sort of goes back to where we began in this conversation, because when you really have worked hard at the technical, then breathing through the technical will set you free. And then you can play, and then you can experiment, and then you can be truly free. But you first have to work your ass off to achieve freedom. You can't just show up and be spontaneous and good work will ensue. I mean, there are moments, but it's usually because you've built such an airtight foundation of technical clarity that then you can let it go.
Yes. You have to learn it to such a degree that you can forget it, basically. But your body knows it, and that you have to think about it, right? Like you, because if you're thinking about any beat, then you're not in the moment, I would imagine.
Well, and you know, you think, what did Miles Davis do? He did scales obsessively over and over. He was a technical machine.
Yeah.
But you listen to Miles Davis and where he goes, his free landscape with music. And that's because he was a technical machine that went over and over and over and over things and then let go.
But it's so interesting, especially with something like Shakespeare, because the words are there. So you can't improv. Like you can't, it's there. So it's super learned, but then you have to be open to sort of be in the moment, which is a little more like it's emotionally spontaneous, even though I would imagine, right? Because you have different chemistries with different, your relationship to the audience, your relationship to the other actors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know a ton about Shakespeare's. Is there an understanding that he thought that everything had to be done an exact way, or did he just sort of
definitely not? Definitely not. No, that's a complete misconception that's formed over decades of, you know, scholars and experts and bullshit artists. No, I mean, I think it couldn't, any, no one could be more like open to spontaneity and change and, you know, adapting text than Shakespeare. Yeah. He was an actor. He was an actor with the company, you know? So no, it's all about living thought. It's all about, and Shakespeare, when you're riding that wave, that you can surf this language, and it is such a high, it's just cosmic, man. When you're a conduit to that level of poetry and it's just living thought, which is what he wrote. And it's something that all of this technical tinkering gives you and can bring you to, is when you really map it and you really understand what you're saying and it's really living in you, it will liberate something. It will show you how to breathe. It will show you, you know, what word to sail on. And it's a blast.
I love that, because it the idea of that is so, and again, I think this kind of goes back to the Grateful Dead thing too. It's like, you know, do the work and then let it go. Like put in the time and then release the result. I mean, mm-hmm. whether you're talking Shakespeare, whether you're talking, you know, a band that's performed songs 10,000 times,
mm-hmm.
the sort of releasing the result allows them to be free and explore. And I'm sure as many Shakespeare performances as you've given, it allows you to be free and explore different corners of your own psyche. And even, do you find that the more experience you have in life gives you the ability to go back and sort of reinterpret these things in
new ways? Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because at each stage of your life, you're in such a different place. So yeah, it's a constant examination, re-examination. And also because if you're lucky and if you're conscious, you continue to grow, you know?
Right.
So of course it keeps growing and shifting, and, it's one of the great joys of being an actor over a lifespan is being able to revisit, rethink, re-explore. It's awesome.
Yeah. And also everyone is unique, because, you know, each job that you take is the sum total of everything that you've done up to that point in your life.
Yeah.
And so the more you do that, the more you have to draw from it. Like I would be shocked if all this time that you've gotten to spend in your family doesn't surface later
in
something else at some point.
Without a doubt. And it's also so great, because as you get older, if you're lucky and if you're conscious, you know, things like parenting was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I mean, I have an awesome kid, and I'm just ridiculously fortunate, and I have an awesome husband. But also, you know, I am not the priority. I am by far not the priority.
That's
anymore.
Liberating.
It is so liberating. And the older I get too, I'm 50 now, and I just don't, I mean, A, I don't care about most of what I used to think was so fucking important. I really don't care, like deeply don't care. But I just don't worry about most shit. I just don't worry about it. A lot of the dross gets burned off over time. And that is the beauty to living longer and getting older. You know, in our culture, we're so concerned about getting older and living longer and all of the downsides. But I find it an amazing and awesome experience. Now, granted, I'm 50, so I'm not arthritic or, you know,
right,
losing my memory or dealing with those things yet. But at this point on the road, I can report that it's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like when you're 20 or 25 and you think 30 is the oldest number in the world, and then you hit 30 and then you think, oh my God, well, at least I'm not 40. And then you hit 40 and you're like,
I was a baby.
Yeah, exactly. And it is funny that we pursue youth like a fucking drug. And yet a lot of times we're our most lost in our youth. So I don't.
Yeah.
So I think it boils down to what you were saying earlier. It's like, youth maybe, but maybe it's just really about more time, because once you kind of, that is an interesting paradox. Once you kind of figure out what's important, you want to spend as much time as you can living that way. But also one of the things I think you hopefully learn is to focus more on the present. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of nullifies the other thing, but yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I think they work in tandem. I think both can be true. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, but this idea of just, and this is just such a great stage thing of just being in the moment, being present. You can't, I guess you could, if you had enough experience, fake your way through a performance if your mind was going, well, I'm here and my body's on stage, but I'm thinking about bills that I have to pay, or I'm worrying about some past slight that someone said to me at a party, or, you know. But really, you kind of need to be as present as possible.
You know, I learned this a long time ago. So I'm going to tell you something that I don't talk about very much. But I suffer from very intense stage fright and panic attacks and anxiety.
Oh, wow.
Like I really, especially when I was younger, it's definitely gotten more manageable as I've gotten older. But I had a period of having like full-blown panic attacks on stage where I went out of my body and thought I was going to die.
Right.
And I would have to leave the stage. And I remember once I had to walk off stage and I went to my dressing room and climbed under my table in a fetal position and like couldn't get out. And an actor who was in the show grabbed me and dragged me back and threw me on stage. And I got through the performance somehow. I don't remember how. I think most of it was gibberish. And he later said, you know, if you didn't get back out there, you probably never would have. You'd probably get spooked. And I think he was right. And anyway, so I've had these like crazy panic attacks where I've left stage, come back, had to have a glass of water. And energetically, the audience, after one of these experiences where I had a full-blown panic attack, saw a tunnel of white light, thought I was having a heart attack, was going to die. I walked off. I had a glass of water, came back on, had to stand there with my glass of water and breathe for a few minutes, and then went on with the play. I had so many people after that performance say, that director was so brilliant. Like all of that stuff to leave stage and then come, like totally.
No, it was all planned, guys.
So again, like all I can do is try to get from the beginning to the end, do the job to the best of my ability, and stay away from worrying about the result.
Wow. Yeah. That's just life, right? You get terrified by things.
Yep.
And you just have to do them anyway, because I'm saying this like it's super easy. It's not.
It's a fact.
That other actor was correct. If you had not gone back out there, you would have created you would have reinforced giving in to fear, which would have had implications and reached into other areas of your life, like I am afraid and I will give into that fear and I will not do this thing, that would have affected the fact that you still went out there and did it anyway is huge for the rest of your life. Huge.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree 100%. And I'm incredibly grateful to him to this day.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
As we're sort of wrapping this up, because we've already been talking for an hour, which blows me away. This has been such a wonderful conversation. Is there anything you want to talk about with Hellstrom, or anything that you, I mean, like I tend to just like to talk, and because I never want anyone to feel like, you know, like it's a junket.
You got to hit the talking points.
You got to hit all the, you got to say the four things that you say, but I do, because I'm excited to see it. Like is there anything you want to talk about with it or say or plug about it?
You know, I will say, are you a Marvel fan? Are you someone who...
Yeah, I mean, I was when I was growing up, I was not as much a comic book guy as I was, you know, I was obsessed with television and film. Mm-hmm. I had a friend in school that scared me off of comic books because every week he would go buy two of everything. And one would never get opened. The other would get
would go into the plastic
opened. So they were a degree off of in condition from each other because one he very carefully read with gloves, and everything Amazing. Was so meticulously separated. And I was so overwhelmed and freaked out by it. And I thought in my 11, 10 year old mind, like, oh, this is how you have to do that. And it kind of scared me off. And so, you know, I was always much more of an interactive, you know, stand-up mm-hmm. comedy and film and television and stuff. So mm-hmm. that's my long-winded mm-hmm. way of saying I was not as much a comic book nerd growing up as I was for film and television. So, but I'm familiar with what you're...
You know, the universe. Yeah. Yeah. So I think for those who are Marvel people, this will be a very cool new experience because... From what I know, and which is not as in depth as many Marvel fans, but I've seen all the films and I've read a lot of the comic books. The cool thing about this is it's sort of like a whole new wing of the mansion. You know, it's like this horror wing that we're exploring is, and the thing about this show is it is horror. It is not like horror light with some superpowers. It is horror, down to like a lot of our directors are horror film directors. A lot of the folks that came in to do our episodes were from the horror universe. So that is the landscape we were in. And another part of it that I think is really unique to this show and very unusual is that the thing that's so terrifying about it is it sort of starts with the same template as like The Shining, which the thing about The Shining that engages you, that's so frightening, is it's really about a family dynamic breaking down. It's really about a child seeing his parents lose their minds, you know, and that's terrifying. That's like primally terrifying. This show is about a family breaking down. And then we go from there, and then the supernatural comes out of that family cracking open. And the other thing too is that pretty much everything you see is real. Like if you see us standing in a room of flames, we shot in a room of flames. It's not CGI. I can think of one day that we used green screen that I worked. And I don't even think that shot made it. So yeah, like I was harnessed climbing on walls, running around, hanging from the ceiling. Like in rooms of fire, you know, so it's a lot of what happens on the show happened.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, it's this subgenre of entertainment, this sort of like, I mean, I guess superhero is even, that's even too narrow a term because it is expanding into horror and there's so many corners of it. It's just that kind of, the genre based, entertainment. It really is like a style. Like it's a whole, like I wonder if there will be acting like in, you know, in 10 or 20 years, if someone will be giving like a theater workshop on that type of acting, like as
it, well,
as
the thing about it is I think one of the reasons why it was such a comfortable fit for me is because it's like Shakespeare. It's like the Greeks, you know, you're just taking these very domestic situations and then heightening them to almost cosmic levels. Yeah. But it's all connected to a very domestic experience.
Yeah.
And that's a blast.
Not unlike a play about the gods fighting and humans suffering as a result or benefiting as a result. It's very similar thing.
Yeah.
What are you, I think we already kind of touched on this, but I've been asking people a lot, you know, particularly like during pandemic times, like what are you joyful about? It sounds like you're finding a lot of joy in the sort of in the family unit and experience that you're getting to, the gift of this part of it, that's a gift, is being able to spend more time with your family. Is that where your joy is right now at all? But you also think you're discovering more creative molecules.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel ridiculously fortunate in how amazing this pause has been. And it's hard to say that considering how much suffering is happening. Right. And you know, I try to be useful to the best of my ability. And while we're here, living on this farm, living in nature, connecting back to nature, because normally I'm in an urban landscape. Mm-hmm. It's been amazing being in the countryside. We're on Lake Champlain. So my husband and son and I every day put on wetsuits and swim along the coastline here and back every day. So that has been such a joy. Just things like that, taking hikes all the time with my family, eating outside. I mean, we're trying to live like Norwegians and staying outside as long as we can, doing everything outdoors as long as we can. So we're still having dinner outside with many sweaters and hats on. And, it's awesome being in their company and being a family.
That's great. I love hearing the stories about, you know, God, I just have such a cool kid, and it just broadens you and it widens you. You know, it's something that my wife and I are looking at doing. You know,
highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
And so much of it seems scary in the sense of like, I don't want to mess it up, or I don't want to, you know.
And you're going to mess it up, FYI. You're going to totally mess it up. I mess it up all the time.
I don't want to be a helicopter parent, but I don't want to be like stressy about like, oh, don't stand on that. Oh my God, put that down. Oh my God, don't put your finger in that socket. Oh my God, please stay away from the pool. Like, you know, because you want to make sure that your child is safe, but you also want them to be able to grow and have their own sort of internal tools for navigating the world, which they will need when they get older, so that they do not become, say, codependent or, you know, too reliant on. And so it is just sort of like, how do you find the, where?
You know what? You take a flying leap. You take a flying leap. And then really the greatest thing you can do is just show up.
You're under your dressing table and someone just drags you and throws you on stage. Just get the fuck out there. I don't care. I know you're scared. Just fucking get the fuck out there and do it.
Well, that was before I was a parent. Then I learned what real fear is.
Oh, right. Of course. Of course.
Then I learned what real everything is. That's right. It did. Yes, it does. That's right.
You put in the work and then you let it go. You put in the work and then you let it go.
You just don't worry about results.
Well, I've so enjoyed talking to you. Congratulations
Likewise.
On the show.
Thank you.
I hope you find continued happiness. And then when things are able to, hopefully I'll run into you at a Comic-Con one of these
days.
That
would be awesome.
What a moment that will be. Oh my God, we're here. We got to... People can be near each other again. It's back.
That's right. You know? Yes, it's coming. It's coming. And when it comes, it is going to be a joyful celebration.
Joyful, joyful. And then, oh, you know what I was going to ask you? Last question.
Yeah.
When you were touring with Grateful Dead, when you were opening for Grateful Dead, did you have a role or a function in the group? Like, did you make bracelets? Did you
make t-shirts to trade for? I made clothes. Yeah. I made clothes out of like really beautiful Guatemalan material. I would make very simple skirts and shorts to trade. Yeah. That's how I like ate. Yeah. Yeah. The barter system. Totally.
Yeah, because it just that does feel very theatrical to me, with like that skill set of like, you know, we're doing this off Broadway show. There's no budget for thing. You got to fucking make a skirt. You got to make a thing. You have to whatever you have.
You got to figure it out
at home. You got to bring it in because we need some dust. We need some, you know, like orange dust. You know, like that idea of just figure it out.
That's right. Well, that's where the greatest creativity comes is from necessity.
Oh my gosh. Well, I really appreciate it. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for your
Likewise.
Time.
My pleasure. This is great.
Hellstrom, October 16th on Hulu. My wife and I are huge horror fans, and so we're
nice.
Excited.
Oh, good. Cool.
Very excited. It's all pretty much all we watch. So
sweet.
So I look forward to seeing your show. And yeah, I hope to get to see you in the real world space one of these days.
Awesome. I'd love it.
Great. Thanks. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying,
lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.